You've also used up some of the can's energy. As the amount of energy contained in the can drops, its temperature drops as well. Of course, the aerosol can won't stay at that temperature. Like anything that's colder than the surrounding air, the can absorbs heat or energy from the air until eventually it's back at room temperature. This moment of science comes from Indiana University. Today's program was prepared by Don Ulin with help from James Swihart in physics. There are hundreds more moments of science on our website at amos.indiana.edu. To get podcasts, click on the podcast button. For a moment of science, I'm Yael Cassander.
It's 2:41 in sports. Number 8, Wisconsin, has defeated Michigan in a not very pretty game this afternoon in Indianapolis. The score 51-34. The game was the lowest scoring in Big Ten tournament history. It was Wisconsin's 8th straight win and its 21st in the last 23 games. The Badgers will play the winner of the Ohio State-Michigan State game in tomorrow's semifinals. Second seed Purdue faces 10th seed Illinois in the Big Ten quarterfinals. The 17th ranked Boilermakers have been the conference's biggest surprise this season and swept Illinois during the regular season. The Illini advanced with a last-second victory over Penn State yesterday afternoon, 64-63. Illinois and Purdue are scheduled to take the floor this evening at 6:30 Eastern Time. Also in the tourney today, Minnesota will face number 22 Indiana in today's quarterfinals. The Gophers rallied from a 16-point deficit to beat Northwestern 55-52 in the first round of the tournament. Tip-off scheduled for 9 p.m. Eastern Time in that game. And here's the word from Peoria, the Illinois Prep tourney. Simeon and Champaign Central are on the floor at the moment in Peoria. It's in the second quarter. The score, Champaign Central 17, Simeon 15. The Chicago Bulls are still chasing a postseason spot in the Eastern Conference. Tonight they'll play host to Philadelphia. The 76ers in Chicago have split two games this season, with each team winning on the road. And one more sports note, second-round play is underway at the Arnold Palmer Invitational in Orlando. Tiger Woods started the day 5 shots back of co-leaders Fred Couples and J.J. Henry after carding an even par 70 during yesterday's opening round. That's sports.
Today's broadcast is funded in part by a grant from the Illinois Arts Council, a state agency.
The Chicago Police Department says a member of its force refused to take a breathalyzer test after a fatal car crash last fall. They say a videotape shows the officer hoisting drinks in a tavern just before the crash. One witness says the officer was weaving across the road's center line. Another says he was driving about twice the speed limit. But a judge last month dismissed DUI charges, and the officer has recovered his driving privileges. That's despite an Illinois law requiring a 6-month suspension for refusing to take the breathalyzer. The case has the victims' families wondering whether Chicago police who drink and drive are above the law. Illinois Public Radio's Chip Mitchell reports.
The night before Thanksgiving, Tactical Officer John Artelin finished his work on Chicago's North Side and headed for this techno bar in the Loop.
The police say Artelin appeared on a surveillance video here at Martini Ranch for 2.5 hours. They say the video shows him drinking from a shot glass and 3 bigger glasses.
Within 35 minutes of leaving the bar, Artelin was back in his district, driving north on Damon Avenue. That's when his SUV broadsided a sedan carrying 3 Mexican-Americans from Cicero. The crash killed 2 of them, 21-year-old Eric Lagunas and his best friend, a 22-year-old union carpenter named Miguel Flores. Flores owned a house with his sister Nancy.
This is his room.
The young man slept in the basement. In the corner, the family has set up a shrine around his ashes.
We feel like he's still here. You know, every night we come down here and we say goodnight. The kids hug or, you know, give the little urn box a kiss. And, you know, we kind of feel like we still have a little piece of him here with us.
Ever since her brother's death, Flores has been trying to find out exactly what took place. When she arrived at the hospital, she says a Chicago police officer questioned her. Something, she says, didn't seem right.
They just told us that it was an accident, and at that point I was like, I can't believe that my brother just passed away and nobody can explain to me what happened.
Flores went to the district station, but says the accident's investigator wouldn't tell her much either. She says she didn't find out the other driver was a cop until TV reporters told her. Flores eventually learned the police didn't administer a breathalyzer test on Officer Ardeline until more than 7 hours after the crash. The test found alcohol, but not more than the legal limit for driving. Based on other evidence, the police cited Ardeline for misdemeanor DUI and failure to slow down.
I want to ask around just to find out about...
David Malham is chatting on the phone with a prosecutor. Malham is a victims advocate with Mothers Against Drunk Driving. This conversation is about another fatal crash involving an allegedly intoxicated Chicago police officer. Malham says it's bad enough that some cops drive drunk.
What's unsettling is the collusion in some of these cases after the fact, where other police officers who are to protect law-abiding citizens are, in this instance, doing the reverse. They are protecting the lawbreakers.
There's nothing further from the truth as far as taking care of their buddies and their fellow police officers.
Mark Donahue heads the Fraternal Order of Police Lodge that represents Chicago cops.
Because of the scrutiny that officers come under today, that is more than not likely to happen.
The police department hasn't responded to our questions or requests for records about Ardeline's case. A spokesperson says that's because the officer and his supervisors are still under investigation. That probe didn't stop a Cook County judge last month from rescinding the suspension of Ardeline's driver's license.
We were never invited to that hearing. We never knew anything about that hearing ever even happening.
That's Nancy Flores again.
As much as I have called the state's attorney's office and as many emails as I sent, they would have known that we would have wanted to be present at that hearing because we've attended everything else.
A state's attorney's spokesman declined to speak on tape, but insists the office didn't know the families would have wanted to attend. And he says Illinois constitutional protections for victims don't apply to traffic court. The family did get to attend one court session last month. It was a preliminary hearing after prosecutors upgraded the DUI charge to 2 felony counts. At that hearing, the prosecutors said Ardeline had been passing cars at about 60 miles per hour. The officer's attorney, Thomas Needham, counters that the other driver disregarded a stop sign.
So the cause of the accident was the driver of the other vehicle, not my client.
What about the swerving over the center line?
There was a civilian witness who stated that my client crossed in the wrong lane to get around him. The same witness insisted several times during his testimony that my client's vehicle was a black SUV when in fact it was a silver SUV. I think he was just thinking of a different vehicle or else his memory was just totally flawed.
An Illinois state police expert estimated from the breathalyzer result that Ardeline's blood alcohol level during the crash exceeded the limit. But the judge voiced doubt about that estimate and threw out the charges. He pointed to testimony from a bartender of the tavern. The bartender said Ardeline was buying drinks for other people and didn't seem drunk. Daniel O'Connor, the family's attorney, says the prosecutors should have challenged this witness.
He served him beer. He admitted to drinking a shot of tequila with him. So clearly these guys are somewhat friendly. And then he testified that he gave him several shot glasses of water, which, I'm not an expert on bars, but I haven't seen too many shot glasses of water being poured.
After the hearing, Latino lawmakers and community leaders rallied behind the families. Retired Cook County Judge Raymond Figueroa blasted prosecutors for bringing the case to a preliminary hearing instead of a grand jury.
The grand jury, 99.9% of the time, is going to come back with a finding of probable cause to take the trial. They didn't want the grand jury to have that. They'd rather have it in front of a judge. This is the state's attorney. It's supposed to be representing the people.
In a written response, the state's attorney's office said its strategy reflected the difficulty prosecutors would have had at trial. 3 weeks ago, the office reopened its investigation. But Nancy Flores hasn't received word since then on whether the prosecutors will bring Officer Ardeline back to court.
It's hard enough to lose somebody that is very important in our family, and then on top of that, have to deal with all this. So my biggest fear is that they'll come back and tell me that they can't do anything about it.
Advocates for the families of the young men who died in the crash are circulating petitions for new criminal charges and a grand jury. I'm Chip Mitchell.
Three o'clock, Central Time. This is the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for tuning in today. The Chanute Air Museum is located on the grounds of the former Chanute Air Force Base in Rantoul, a base with a history stretching back to 1917. It is struggling to survive. There was the loss of a grant last summer's air show, providing less revenue than anticipated. So at the end of last month, the museum's director and board were faced with the possibility of having to close the museum. Over the last few weeks, the museum has faced some tough choices, but efforts are underway to keep the museum open and plan for a more financially secure future. The museum's curator is Mark Hansen, and he joins me this afternoon to talk about the museum's exhibits, activities, and its future. Hi, Mark. Mark Hansen, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Great.
Well, what would the state in East Central Illinois lose if the museum was to close?
Oh, boy, a lot. Right now, for the village of Rantoul, we're one of the very few cultural institutions. We also have collections that are irreplaceable, not found anywhere else. And also, I think, unlike most aviation museums, our approach to our mission and our mission itself is thematically unique. We tend to focus more on the technical training aspects of aviation, obviously because of Chanute Air Force Base, but we're less about the pilots and the actual flying and more about what makes the airplanes work, how were men trained to maintain them, and those types of things.
What kinds of exhibits, then, do visitors find when they come through the doors?
Sure. Well, one of the first exhibits they see is obviously our Life at Chanute exhibit hall, which touches on Chanute Air Force Base's history starting in 1917 when it opened to basically train pilots for World War One. All the way through closure in 93, where it was one of the preeminent technical training bases. In other words, they were training, the mechanics, the folks to maintain ICBM missiles, and those types of things, rather than having active flying squadrons here or flight training here. One of our newest exhibits that opened just within the last couple of years is the 99th Pursuit Squadron exhibit.
Mm-hmm.
What most people don't realize is the Tuskegee Airmen were actually formed here at Chanute Field when the 99th Pursuit Squadron was activated in 1941. They were here less than a year. None of the pilots were here. So that's a very short segment of that history, which is often overlooked, but really very important to the history of not only Rantoul, but Illinois in general.
Yeah, and also there are some ties to the Tuskegee Airmen.
Yes, the 99th Pursuit Squadron was actually the first unit of what would later become known as the Tuskegee Airmen.
Yeah. How many airplanes do you have on display there?
We have about 40. 43, I believe, is the exact number, ranging anywhere from fairly small home-built general aviation aircraft all the way up to, I think, our largest is probably the C-133, which is a huge Air Force transport plane.
Yeah. Now, since the museum has been talking about the challenges it's facing, have you seen an increase in visitors and donations?
Absolutely. The plea that went out to our membership and the general populace to basically raise emergency funds to allow us some breathing room to hopefully avoid closure and make the necessary changes to kind of get out of crisis mode has been astounding. And also, a lot of the press that we've had has increased our numbers. visitor numbers through the door. Usually this time of year, it's not uncommon to have no visitors on any given day.
Mm-hmm.
And over the last couple of weeks, we've had visitor numbers that rival what we usually have in the summer, which is our peak season.
Yeah. Well, maybe this coming week you'll do really well with many kids out of school.
You bet. We hope so. We hope so.
Yeah. So how do things look at the moment?
We are still in crisis mode. However, as I mentioned, because of our membership and local folks wanting to help out, either monetarily or, you know, showing up to come through the museum, closure is not imminent at this point. We do have a little bit of breathing room to hopefully get our bearings and get our feet underneath us a little bit, but we definitely still are on a crisis footing.
Yeah. One of the things that you offer is an aviation camp for kids mm-hmm. in the summertime. Will there be a camp invention this summer?
Yes. Both of our summer camps are still scheduled. We hope to have lots of folks. Those are great programs for kids. Camp Invention is actually geared toward the younger children, more elementary age, whereas our air camp is geared toward, I think it's 6th through 9th graders.
Mm-hmm.
Camp Invention is a hands-on kind of exploration into science and inventing and problem-solving, whereas Air Camp is more strictly an aviation education experience where participants go to the U of I and take a flight with one of the instructors down there. All kinds of hands-on aviation related lectures and activities to really introduce these kids about aviation and hopefully interest them in a possible career in aviation, whether that's with the military or as a civilian.
Okay, we've got to wrap it up here, but if folks want to check you out, what are your hours?
Our hours are 10 to 5, Monday through Friday, and noon to 5 on Sunday.
Okay, very good. Mark, thanks so much.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
Mark Hansen is the curator for the Chanute Air Museum.
Earth and Sky.
Friday, March 14th, 2008. Finding the red planet Mars tonight and tomorrow night is as easy as finding the moon.
Mars is that moderately bright, star-like object near the moon on March 14th and 15th. If you look, you can see that Mars appears reddish and glows with a steadier light than the twinkling stars. When the moon and Mars first pop into view at nightfall, they're near their highest in the sky for the night. As seen from middle and far northern latitudes, the moon and Mars soar higher at nightfall than the loftiest noonday summer sun.
At the same time, as seen from the southern hemisphere, these worlds appear lower in the sky than the midday sun in winter. Because the moon and Mars are so far north, they'll set well after midnight at northern temperate latitudes. And if you're close enough to the Arctic Circle, say Fairbanks, Alaska, you'll actually see the moon and Mars all night long.
Because we live on a round globe, with nightfall sweeping around the globe as the hours pass, the moon and Mars tonight look a little different from place to place. For instance, in East Asia and Australia, the moon, now at a first quarter phase, will be closer to Mars tomorrow evening than tonight.
But no matter where you live, look outside tonight and tomorrow for the moon and Mars. I'm Joel Block.
And I'm Deborah Bird for Earth and Sky, a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
Today's programming is made possible by the Courier Cafe, serving breakfast, lunch, and dinner every day. Whether it's almond French toast for breakfast, garden fresh salads and homemade soups for lunch, or burgers and hand-dipped shakes for dinner, the Courier Cafe in downtown Urbana has been offering fresh choices for 28 years.
It's 1 minute before 3 o'clock. This is WILL, Urbana, the broadcasting service of the College of Communications at the University of Illinois. I'm Celeste Quinn. Henry Frain is our technical director. Coming up, the world from PRI. Tonight's forecast for Champaign-Urbana, mostly cloudy with a chance of rain and snow showers after midnight, the low 35. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy, windy and colder with occasional light rain and snow, the high 42. The wind from the northeast at 12 to 24 miles per hour. Saturday, Saturday night, partly cloudy and colder, the low 27. Sunday, mostly sunny, the high 46. It's 3 o'clock.